Chapter 3. First Impression. The Island of Hybris. Limbo. One night, Imp number one dreamed he was a demon. He dreamed his horns were curved and pointed. His hide was coarse and armoured, and his talons were sharp enough to rip the hide from a wild boar's back. He dreamed the other demons cowered before him, then scurried away lest he injure them while in the throes of his battle spasms. That night he dreamed this magnificent dream, then awoke to find he was still merely an imp. Of course, technically, he did not have this dream at night. The sky over Hybris is forever tinged with the red glow of dawn. But number one thought of his rest period as night, even though he'd never seen one. Imp number one dressed quickly, rushing into the hallway to check his reflection in the lodge mirror, just in case he had warped in his sleep. But there was no change. Still the same unimpressive figure as usual. 100% imp.
Grrr,
he said to his image. And even the number one in the mirror was unconvinced. And if he couldn't scare himself, then he was not a scary creature and might as well get a job changing baby imps. There was some potential in the mirror. Imp number one had the general skeletal structure of a proper demon. He was about the same height as a sheep sitting on its rear. His skin was grey as moondust and pebbled with armoured plating. Spiralling red runes wound their way round his chest, up along his neck and across his forehead. His eyes had striking orange irises, and his jaw had a noble jut about it, or so he liked to think, though others had called it protruding. He had two arms, slightly longer than an average human 10-year-old, and two legs, slightly shorter. Fingers and toes, 8 of each, so nothing weird there. One tail, more of a stump, actually, but excellent for burrowing holes if you were hunting for grubs. All in all, your typical imp. But at 14 years old, the oldest imp in Hybris. Roughly 14 years old, that is. It was hard to be exact when it was always dawn. The hour of power, as the warlocks used to call it, before they got sucked into the depths of cold space. The hour of power. Very catchy. Hadley Shrivlington Bassett, a demon who was actually 6 months number one's junior, but already fully fledged, strolled down the tiled corridor on his way to the washroom. His horns corkscrewed impressively and his ears had at least 4 points. Hadley enjoyed parading his new demon self in front of the imps. Generally, demons shouldn't even bunk in the imp lodge, but Bassett seemed in no hurry to move out. "Hey, imp!" he said, snapping his towel at number one's behind. It connected with a sharp crack. "Are you going to warp any time soon? Maybe if I get you angry enough." The towel stung, but number one didn't get angry. Just nervous. Everything made him nervous. That was his problem. Time for a quick subject change. "Morning, Bassett. Nice ears."
"I know," said Hadley, tipping the points one after another. 4 points already, and I think there's a fifth coming up."
Abbott himself only has 6 points. Leon Abbott, the hero of Hybris, the demon's self-proclaimed saviour. Hadley snapped number one again with a towel.
"Don't you get a pain in your face looking in the mirror, imp? Because you're giving me a pain in mine."
He put his hands on his hips, threw back his head and laughed. It was all very dramatic. You'd think there was an artist in the wings doing sketches.
Bassett, you're not wearing any silver."
The laughing stopped, to be replaced by a frog-like gurgle. Shrivlington Bassett bolted down the lodge corridor without pause for more bullying. Number one knew scaring people half to death shouldn't give him any satisfaction, and generally it wouldn't. But for Bassett, he'd make an exception. Not wearing silver on your person is much more than a fashion disaster for a demon or imp. For them, it can be fatal, or worse. Painful for all eternity. This rule usually only applied by the volcano crater, but luckily Bassett was too scared to remember that. Number one ducked back into the senior imp dorm, hoping his roommates were still snoring. No such luck. They were knuckling the sleep from their eyes and already searching for the target of their daily ribbing, which was, of course, him. He was by far the oldest in the senior dorm. No one else had made it to 14 without warping. It was getting to the point where he was a permanent fixture. Each night his legs protruded from the foot of the bed, and his blanket barely covered the swirling moon markings on his chest.
"Hey, Runt," called one. "Are you going to warp today, do you think? Or will pink flowers grow out of my armpits?"
"I'll check your armpits tomorrow,"
sniggered another. More abuse. This time from a couple of 12-year-old imps who were so pumped up that they were likely to warp before class. But they were right. He would have gone for the pink flowers option too. Runt was his imp nickname. They didn't have real names, not until after they warped. Then they would be given a name from the sacred text. Until that moment, he was stuck with number one, or Runt. He smiled good-naturedly. It didn't pay to antagonize his dorm mates. Even though they were smaller than him today, they could be a lot bigger tomorrow.
"I'm feeling pumped," he said, flexing his biceps. "Today is going to be my day."
Everyone in the dorm was excited. Tomorrow, they could be out of this room for good. Once they walked, they were transferred to decent accommodation, and nothing in Hybris was off-limits.
"Who do we hate?"
shouted one.
"Humans!"
came the reply. The next minute or so was spent howling at the ceiling. Imp number one joined in, but he wasn't really feeling it.
"It shouldn't be who do we hate," he thought. "It really should be whom."
But this probably wasn't a good time to bring that up. Imp school. Sometimes number one wished he had known his mother. This was not a very demon-like desire, so he kept it to himself. Demons were born equal, and whatever they made of themselves, they did with their claws and teeth. As soon as the female laid an egg, it was tossed in a bucket of mineral-enriched mud and left to hatch. Imps never knew who their families were, and therefore everyone was their family. But still, some days, when his self-esteem had taken a bit of a pounding, number one couldn't help gazing wistfully across at the female compound on his way to school and wondering which one was his mother. There was one demoness with red markings like his own and a kind face. Often she smiled across the wall at him. She was looking for her son, number one suddenly realized, and from that day he smiled back. They could both pretend to have found each other. Number one had never experienced a feeling of belonging. He ached for the time when he could wake up and look forward to what lay ahead. That day hadn't come yet, and it wasn't likely to, not for as long as they lived in limbo. Nothing would change. Nothing could change. Well, that wasn't strictly true. Things could get worse. Imp School was a low stone building with very little ventilation and hardly any light. Perfect for most imps. The stench and the smoky fire made them feel hard done by and warlike. Number one longed for light and fresh air. He was uniquely different, a brand new point on the compass. Or maybe an old one. Number one often thought that perhaps he could be a warlock. True, there hadn't been a warlock in the demon pride since they lifted out of time. But maybe he was the first. And that was why he felt so differently about almost everything. Number one had raised this theory with Master Rawley, but the teacher had cuffed his ear hole and sent him digging grubs for the other imps. There was another thing. Why couldn't they just once have a cooked meal? What would be so horrible about a soft stew or maybe even a few spices? Why did imps delight in chomping their food down before it stopped wriggling? As usual, number one was the last to school. The other dozen or so imps were already in the hall, reveling in the thoughts of another day spent hunting, skinning, butchering, and possibly even warping. Number one wasn't feeling particularly hopeful. Maybe today would be his day, but he doubted it. The warp spasm was brought on by bloodlust, and number one had never felt the slightest urge to hurt any other creature. He even felt bad for the rabbits he ate, and sometimes dreamed that their little spirits were haunting him. Master Rawley sat at his bench, sharpening a curved sword. Every now and then, he would hack a chunk from the bench and grunt with satisfaction. The desk's surface was littered with various weapons for hacking, sawing, and cutting. And, of course, one book. A copy of Lady Hetherington Smythe's Hedgerow, the book Leon Abbott had brought back from the old world, the book that would save them all, according to Abbott himself. When Rawley had sharpened the blade to a silver crescent, he banged the hilt of the weapon on his bench.
"Sit down, he roared at the imps, and make it fast, you shower of stinking rabbit droppings. I've got a fresh blade here that I'm just itching to test.
The imps hurried to their places. Rawley would not cut them, but he was certainly not above strapping their backs with the flat of his sword. And then again, maybe he would cut them. Number one squashed in on the end of the fourth row.
Look tough, he told himself. Sneer a bit. You're an imp.
Rawley sank his blade into the wood, leaving it there quivering. The other imps grunted, impressed. All number one could think of was, show off. And he's ruined that bench.
So, big slime, said Rawley. You want to be demons, do you?
Yes, Master Rawley, roared the imps.
You think you have what it takes?
Yes, Master Rawley.
Rawley spread his muscled arms wide. He threw back a green head and roared.
Well then, let me hear it.
The imps screamed and stomped, bashed their desks with weapons and clattered each other on the shoulders. Number one avoided as much of the consternation as possible while doing his best to seem involved. Not an easy trick. Finally, Rawley settled them down.
Well, we'll see. This morning is a big morning for some of you, but for others, it will be just one more day of dishonor, grub-hunting with the females.
He stared pointedly at number one.
But before we get to oozing, we have to do some snoozing.
Much groaning from the imps.
That's right, girls. History time. Nothing to kill and nothing to eat, just knowledge for the sake of it.
Rawley shrugged his giant knotted shoulders.
It's a waste of time if you ask me, but I'm under orders here.
That's right, Master Rawley, said a voice from the doorway. You're under orders.
The voice belonged to Leon Abbott himself, paying one of his surprise visits to the school. Abbott was immediately surrounded by adoring imps, clamouring to receive a friendly cuff of the ear or to touch his sword. Abbott endured this adoration for a moment, then brushed the imps aside. He elbowed Rawley out of the prime spot at the head of the class, then waited for silence. He didn't have to wait long. Abbott was an impressive specimen, even if you didn't know a thing about his past. He was almost 5 feet tall, with curved ram horns that jutted from his forehead. His armoured scales were deep red and covered his entire torso and forehead. Very impressive, and of course difficult to penetrate. You could bash away with an axe all day at Abbott's chest and get nowhere. Indeed, one of his party tricks was to challenge anyone in the room to hurt him. Abbott threw back his rawhide cloak and slapped his chest.
Right! Who wants to have a go?
Several imps nearly warped right then and there.
Make a line, ladies, said Rawley,
as if he was still in control. The imps piled to the head of the class, hammering Abbott with fist, foot and forehead. They bounced off, every one, much to Abbott's amusement.
Idiots, thought number one, as if they could possibly succeed.
Actually, number one had a theory about armoured scales. A few years ago, he had been toying with a discarded baby armoured scale, and he'd noticed they were made up of dozens of layers, which made them almost impossible to breach head-on, whereas if you went at them at an angle with something hot...
What about you, runt?
The raucous laughter of his classmates stomped all over number one's thoughts. Number one physically twitched with shock as he realised that not only had Leon Abbott spoken to him, he had actually used his dormitory nickname.
Yes, sir? Pardon me, what?
Abbott thumped his own chest.
You think you can get through the thickest plates on Hybris?
I doubt they're the thickest,
said number one's mouth before his brain had a chance to catch up.
Rah!
Roared Abbott, or something similar.
Are you insulting me, impling?
Being called impling was even worse than being called runt. The term impling was generally reserved for the recently hatched.
No, of course not, Master Abbott. I just thought that naturally some of the older demons would have more layers on their scales, but yours are probably tougher. No dead layers on the inside.
Abbott's slitted eyes squinted at number one.
You seem to know a lot about scales. Why don't you try and get through these?
Number one tried to laugh it off.
Oh, I really don't think...
But Abbott wasn't even smiling.
I really do think, Runt. Get your stumpy tail up here before I give Master Rawley license to do what he's wanted to do for a long time.
Rawley pulled his blade from the bench and winked at number one. This was not a friendly, you and I share a secret, wink. It was a, let's see what colour your insides are, wink. Number one sloped reluctantly to the head of the class, passing the smouldering embers of last night's fire. Wooden meat skewers jutted from the coals. Number one paused for a beat, gazing at the sharp skewers, thinking that if he had the guts, one of those would probably do the trick. Abbott followed his gaze.
What? You think a meat skewer is going to help you? Ha ha!
The demon snorted.
I was buried in molten lava once, Runt, and I'm still here. Bring one up. Do your worst. Do your worst,
echoed several of Number One's classmates, their loyalties obvious. Number One reluctantly selected a wooden needle from the fire. The handle was solid enough, but the tip was black and flaky. Number One tapped the skewer against his leg to dislodge loose ash. Abbott grabbed the meat skewer from Number One's hand, holding it aloft.
This is your chosen weapon, he said mockingly. The Runt thinks he's hunting rabbits.
The jeers and hoots broke over Number One's furrowed brow like a wave. He could feel one of his headaches coming on. He could always count on one to show up just when it was least wanted.
This is probably a bad idea, he admitted. I should just pound on your armoured plates like those other morons. I mean, my classmates.
No, no, said Abbott, handing back the skewer. You go ahead, little bee. Prick me with your sting.
Prick me with your sting,
warbled Number One in a highly insulting imitation of the pride leader. Of course, he didn't warble this aloud. Number One was rarely confrontational outside his head. Aloud, he said,
I'll do my best, Master Abbott.
I'll do my best, Master Abbott,
warbled Abbott, in a highly insulting imitation of Imp Number One, as loudly as he could. Number One felt beads of sweat spiral down his stumpy tail. There really was no good way out of this situation. If he failed, he was in for another bout of jeering and mild personal injury. But if he won, then he really lost. Abbott knocked on the crown of his head.
Hello, Runt. Let's get moving. There are imps here waiting to warp.
Number One stared at the tip of the skewer and allowed the problem to take over. He placed the flat of his right hand on Abbott's chest. Then, wrapping his fingers tightly round the thick end, he twisted the skewer upwards into one of Abbott's armoured scales. He twisted slowly, concentrating on the point of contact. The scale grayed slightly with ash, but no penetration. Acrid smoke twirled round the skewer. Abbott chuckled, delighted.
Trying to start a fire there, Runt. Should I summon the water brigade?
One of the imps threw his lunch at Number One. It slid down the back of his head, a lump of fat, bone and gristle. Number One persisted, rolling the skewer between thumb and forefinger. He rolled faster now, feeling the skewer take hold, burning a slight indent. Number One felt an excitement build in him. He tried to contain it, think about the consequences, but he couldn't. He was on the point of success here. He was just about to accomplish with brains something all these other idiots couldn't do with brawn. Of course, they would pummel him, and Abbott would invent some excuse to undermine his achievement, but Number One would know, and so would Abbott. The skewer penetrated just a fraction. Number One felt the plate give way, perhaps a single layer. The little imp felt something he had never felt before. Triumph! The feeling built inside him, irresistible, unquenchable. It became more than a feeling. It transformed into a force, rebuilding some forgotten neural pathways, releasing an ancient energy inside Number One.
What's happening? Wondered Number One. Should I stop? Can I stop?
Yes and no were the answers to those questions. Yes, he should stop, but no, he couldn't. The force flowed through his limbs, raising his temperature. He heard voices chanting inside his mind. Number One realized that he was chanting with them. Chanting what? He had no idea, but somehow his memory knew. The strange force throbbed in Number One's fingers, in time with his heartbeat, then pulsed out of his body into the skewer. The pin turned to stone. Wood morphed to granite before his eyes. The rock virus spread along the shaft, rippling like water. In the flash of a spark, the skewer was completely made of stone. It expanded slightly into the breach in Abbott's armoured plate. The expansion cracked the plate open a couple of centimetres. Abbott heard the noise. So did everybody else. The demon pride leader flicked his eyes downwards and realised instantly what was going on.
Magic!
He hissed. The word was out before he could stop it. With a vicious swipe, he swatted the skewer away from his torso into the fire. Number One stared at his throbbing hand. Power still shimmered around his fingertips, a tiny heat haze.
Magic, he repeated. That means I must be a...
Shut your stupid mouth! Snapped Abbott, covering the cracked scale with his cloak. Obviously I don't mean actual magic, I mean trickery! You twist the handle on that skewer to make it crack, then you ooh and ah, as though you have actually achieved something. Number One pulled at Abbott's cloak.
But your scale?
Abbott drew the cloak tighter. What about my scale? There's not a mark on it. Not so much as a smear, you believe me, don't you? Number One sighed. This was Leon Abbott. The truth meant nothing.
Yes, Master Abbott, I believe you.
I can tell by your insolent tone that you do not. Very well. Proof, then. Abbott whipped back his cloak, revealing an unblemished scale. For a moment, Number One thought he saw a blue spark playing about where the mark had definitely been. But then the spark winked itself out.
Blue sparks? Could it be magic?
Abbott jabbed the imp's chest with a rigid finger.
We've talked about this, Number One. I know you think you're a warlock, but there are no warlocks. There haven't been since we lifted out of time. You are not a warlock. Forget that idiotic notion and concentrate on warping. You're a disgrace to your race.
Number One was about to risk a protest when he was grabbed roughly by the arm.
You slippery little snail!
Shouted Rawley, spittle spattering Number One's face.
Trying to trick the pride leader? Get back to your place, I'll deal with you later.
Number One could do nothing but return to the bench and bear the insults of his classmates. And there were plenty of those, usually accompanied by a missile or a blow. But somehow Number One ignored these latest humiliations, staring instead at his own hand. The one that had turned wood to stone. Could it be true? Could he actually be a warlock? And if he was, would that make him feel better or worse? A toothpick bounced off his forehead onto the bench. There was a sliver of grey meat stuck to the end. Number One glanced up to find Rawley grinning at him.
Been trying to get that out for weeks. Wild boar, I think. Now pay attention, runt. Master Abbott is trying to educate you.
Oh, yes, the history lesson. It was amazing how much Leon Abbott managed to insert himself into demon history. To hear him tell it, you would think that he had single-handedly saved the Eighth Family, in spite of the meddling warlocks. Abbott studied the hooked talons on his fingertips. Each one could gut a large pig. If Abbott's own stories were true, he had warped at age 8 while wrestling one of the island's wild dogs. His fingernails had actually changed into talons during the fight, lacerating the dog's side. Number One found this story highly unlikely. It took hours to warp fully, sometimes days, but Abbott expected them to believe that his warp was instantaneous. Hogwash. And yet all the other imps lapped up these self-glorifying legends.
Of all the demons who fought in the last battle at Talte,
droned Abbott in what he probably thought was a good voice for history lessons, but in what Number One thought was a boring enough voice to turn soft cheese hard.
I, Leon Abbott, am the last.
Convenient, thought Number One. Nobody left around to argue. He also thought, you look your age, Leon. Too many barrels of pork fat. Number One was an uncharitable imp when in a bad mood. It is the nature of out-of-time spells that the aging process is drastically slowed. Abbott had been a young buck when the warlocks lifted Hybris out of time, and so the spell, combined with good genes, had kept him and his huge ego alive ever since. Possibly 1,000 years. Of course, that was 1,000 years normal time. In Hybris time, a millennium meant very little. A couple of centuries could skip by in the blink of an eye on the island. An imp could wake up one morning to find that he'd evolved. A while back, every demon and imp in Hybris got up one morning with a stubby tail where his long, magnificent one used to be. For a considerable time after that, the most common noises on the island were the sounds of demons falling down or swearing as they got up again.
After that great battle, in which the demon battalions were the bravest and fiercest in the people's army, continued Abbott, to hoots of approval from the imps, we were defeated by treachery and cowardice. The elves would not fight, and the dwarves would not dig traps. We had no choice but to cast our spell and regroup until the time was right to return. More hooting plus stamping of feet.
Every time, thought Number One, do we have to go through this every time? These imps act like they've never heard this story before. When is someone going to stand up and say, excuse me, old news, move on?
And so we breed. We breed and grow strong. Now our army has over 5,000 warriors, surely enough to defeat the humans. I know this because I, Leon Abbott, have been to the world and returned to Hybris alive.
This was Abbott's golden nugget. This was where anyone who stood against him withered and blew away. Abbott had not come directly to Limbo with the rest of Hybris. For some reason, he had been diverted to the human future, then sucked back across to Hybris. He had seen the human camps and actually brought his knowledge home. How all this happened was a bit hazy. According to Abbott, there had been a great battle. He'd defeated 50 or so men. Then a mysterious warlock had lifted him out of time again, but not before he'd grabbed a couple of things to bring back. Since the warlocks had been explosively removed from the Eighth Family, nobody had much of a clue about magic anymore. Normal demons had no magic of their own. It had been thought that all the warlocks had been sucked into space during the transferal of Hybris from Earth to Limbo, but according to Abbott, one had survived. This warlock was in league with the humans and had only helped the demon leader under threat of grievous injury. Number One was highly sceptical of this version of events, first of all because it came from Abbott, and secondly because warlocks were being cast once more in a bad light. Demons seemed to forget that if it wasn't for the warlocks, Hybris would have been overrun by humans. On this particular day, Number One was feeling a special attachment to the warlocks, and he did not appreciate their memory being sullied by this loudmouth bracket. Hardly a day went past when Number One did not spend a moment praying for the return of the mysterious warlock who had helped Abbott. And now that he was certain of magic in his own blood, Number One would pray all the harder.
The moon separated me from the rest of the island during the great journey, continued Abbott, his eyes half closed as if the memory had him in a swoon. I was powerless to resist her charms. And so I travelled through space and time until I came to rest in the new world, which is now the world of men. The humans clamped silver on my ankles, tried to make me submit, but I would not.
Abbott hunched his massive shoulders and roared at the roof.
For I am demonkind, and we will never submit.
Needless to say, the imps went into overdrive. The entire room heaved with their exertions. In Number One's opinion, Abbott's entire performance was wooden, to say the least. The "We will never submit" speech was the oldest page in Abbott's book. Number One rubbed his temples trying to ease the headache. There was worse to come, he knew. First the book, then the crossbow. If Abbott didn't deviate from the script, and why would he? He hadn't in all the years since his return from the New World.
"And so I fought," shouted Abbott. "I kicked off their shackles, and Hybris called me home. But before I took my leave of the hated humans, I fought my way to their altar and stole away with two of their blessed objects."
The book and the bow, muttered number one, rolling his orange eyes. Tell us what you stole, begged the others on cue as if they didn't know.
The book and the bow, proclaimed Leon Abbott, pulling the objects from beneath his robe as if by magic.
As if by magic, thought number one, but not actual magic, because then Abbott would be a warlock, and he couldn't possibly be a warlock, as he had already warped, and warlocks did not warp.
Now we know how the humans think, said Abbott, waving the book, and how they fight, he proclaimed, brandishing the crossbow.
I don't believe any of this for a minute, thought number one, or I wouldn't if we had minutes in limbo. Oh, how I wish I was on Earth with the last warlock. Then there would be two of us, and I would find out what really happened when Leon Abbott came calling.
And armed with this knowledge, we can return when the time spell fades and retake the old country.
When? Cried the imps. When?
Soon, replied Abbott. Soon. And there will be humans enough for us all. They will be crushed like the grass beneath our boots. We will tear their heads off like dandelion flowers.
Oh, please, thought number one, enough plant similes. It was quite possible that number one was the only creature on Hybris who ever even thought the human word simile. Saying it aloud would have certainly earned him a thrashing. If the other imps knew that his human vocabulary also included words like grooming and decoration, they would string him up for sure. Ironically, he had learned these words from Lady Hetherington Smythe's hedgerow, which was supposed to be a school text.
Tear their heads off! Shouted one imp,
and it quickly became a chant, taken up by everyone in the room.
Yes, tear their heads off, said number one,
trying it out. But there was no feeling in his voice.
What's my motivation? He wondered. I've never even met a human.
The imps climbed on their benches, bobbing in primal rhythm.
Tear their heads off! Tear their heads off!
Abbott and Rawley urged them on, flexing their claws and howling. A sickly sweet smell clogged the air. Warp muck. Someone was entering the warp spasm phase. The excitement was bringing on the change. Number one felt nothing, not so much as a twinge. He tried his best, squeezing his eyelids together, letting the pressure build in his head, thinking bloody thoughts. But his true feelings shattered the false visions of bloodlust and carnage.
It's no use, he thought. I'm not that kind of demon.
Number one stopped chanting and sat, head in hands. No point in pretending. Another change cycle was passing him by. Not so the other imps. Abbott's theatrics had opened a natural well of testosterone, bloodlust, and bodily fluid. One by one, they succumbed to the warp spasm. Green gunge flowed from their pores, slowly at first, then in bubbling gushes. They all went under, every one of them. It must be some kind of a record, so many imps warping simultaneously. Of course, Abbott would take the credit. The sight of the fluid brought on fresh rounds of howling. And the more the imps howled, the faster the gunge spurted. Number one had heard it said that humans took several years to make the transition from childhood to adulthood. Imps did it in a few hours, and a change like that is going to hurt. The howls of exultation changed to grunts of pain, as bones stretched and horns curled, the gunge-coated limbs already lengthening. The smell was sweet enough to make number one gag. Imps toppled to the floor all around. They thrashed for a few seconds, then their own fluids mummified them. They were cocooned like enormous green bugs, strapped tight by the hardening gunge. The schoolroom was suddenly silent, except for the crack of drying nutrient fluid and a rustle of flames from the stone fireplace. Abbott beamed, a toothy smile that seemed to split his head in half.
A good morning's work, wouldn't you say, Rawley? I got them all warping.
Rawley grunted his agreement, then noticed number one.
Except the runt.
Well, of course not, began Abbott, then caught himself.
Yes, absolutely, except the runt.
Number one's forehead burned under Rawley and Abbott's scrutiny.
I want to warp, he said, looking at his fingers. I really do. But it's the hating thing. I just can't manage it. And all that slime. Even the thought of that stuff all over me makes me feel a bit nauseous.
bit what? Said Rawley suspiciously. Number one realised that he needed to dumb it down for his teacher.
Sick. A bit sick.
Rawley shook his head in disgust.
Slime makes you sick. What kind of imp are you? The others live for slime.
Number one took a deep breath and said something aloud that he had known for a long time.
I'm not like the others.
Number one's voice trembled. He was on the verge of tears.
Are you gonna cry?
Asked Rawley, his eyes bugging.
This is too much, Leon. He's gonna cry now, just like a female. I give up.
Abbott scratched his chin. Let me try something. He rummaged in a cape pocket, surreptitiously fixing something over his hand. Oh, no, thought Number One. Please, no, not Stony. Abbott raised a forearm, his cloak draped over it, a mini stage. A puppet human poked his head over the leather cape. The puppet's head was a grotesque ball of painted clay, with a heavy forehead and clumsy features. Number One doubted that humans were this ugly in real life, but demons were not known for their artistic skills. Abbott often produced Stony as a visual incentive for those imps who were having difficulty warping. Needless to say, Number One had been introduced to the puppet before.
Grr,
said the puppet, or rather Abbott said, as he waggled the puppet.
Grr, my name is Stony the Mudman.
Hello, Stony, said Number One, weakly. How have you been? The puppet held a tiny wooden sword in its hand.
Never mind how I've been. I don't care how you've been because I hate all fairies, said Abbott in a squeaky voice. I drove them from their homes, and if they ever try to come back, I will kill them all.
Abbott lowered the puppet. Now, how does that make you feel? It makes me feel that the wrong demon is in charge of the pride, thought Number One. But aloud, he said,
angry?
Abbott blinked.
Angry? Really?
No, confessed Number One, wringing his hands. I don't feel anything. It's a puppet. I can see your fingers through the material.
Abbott stuffed Stony back in his pocket.
That's it. I've had it with you, Number One. You will never earn a name from the book.
Once demons warped, they were given a human name from Lady Hetherington Smythe's hedgerow, the logic being that learning the human language and possessing a human name would help the demon army think like humans, and therefore defeat them. Abbott may have hated the Mudmen, but that wasn't to say he didn't admire them. Also, politically, it was a good idea to have every demon on Hybris calling each other by names that Leon Abbott had procured for them. Rawley grabbed Number One's ear, dragging him from his seat to the rear of the classroom. A metal grill on the floor covered a shallow, pungent dung pit.
Get to work, runt, he said gruffly. You know what to do.
Number One sighed. He knew only too well. This wasn't the first or second time he'd had to endure this odious task. He hefted a long-handled gaff from a peg on the wall, pulling the heavy grill from its groove. The smell was rank, but not unbearable, as a crust had formed on the dung's surface. Beetles crawled across the craggy skin, their legs clicking like claws on wood. Number One uncovered the pit completely, then selected his nearest classmate. There was no way of telling which classmate it actually was because of the slime cocoon. The only movements were small air bubbles around the mouth and nose. At least, he hoped it was the mouth and nose. Number One bent low, rolling the cocoon along the floor and into the dung pit. The warping imp crashed through the crust, taking a dozen beetles with him into the muck below. A gush of dung stink washed over Number One, and he knew his skin would smell for days. The others would wear their pit stink proudly, but for Number One, it was just another badge of shame. It was arduous work. Not all the warping imps were still. Several struggled inside their cocoons, and twice demon claws punctured the green chrysalis centimetres from Number One's skin. He persisted, groaning loudly, in the hope that Rawley or Leon Abbott would lend a hand. It was a vain hope. The two demons were huddled at the head of the classroom, poring over Lady Hetherington Smythe's hedgerow. Eventually, Number One rolled his last classmate into the dung pit. They were piled in there like meat in a thick stew. The nutrient-rich dung would accelerate their warp, ensuring they reached full potential. Number One sat on the stone floor, catching his breath. Lucky you, thought Number One. dunked in dung. Number One tried to feel envious, but even being near the pit made him gag. The thought of being immersed in it, surrounded by cocooned imps, made his stomach churn. A shadow fell across the flagstones before him, flickering in the firelight. "Ah, Number One," said Abbott. "Always an imp, never a demon, eh? What am I going to do with you?" Number One stared at his own feet, clicking baby talons on the floor.
"Master Abbott, sir, don't you think... isn't there the tiniest chance?"
He took a deep breath and raised his eyes to meet Abbott's.
"Couldn't I be a warlock? You saw what happened with the skewer. I don't want to embarrass you, but you saw it."
Abbott's expression changed instantly. One second he was playing the genial master, the next his true colours shone through.
"I saw nothing," he hissed, heaving Number One to his feet. "Nothing happened, you odious little freak of nature. The skewer was coated with ash, nothing more. There was no transformation, no magic."
Abbott drew Number One close enough to see the slivers of trapped meat between his yellowed teeth. The next time he spoke, his voice seemed different somehow, layered, as though an entire choir was singing in harmony. It was a voice that could not be ignored. Magical? "If you are a warlock, then you should really be on the other side with your relative. Wouldn't that be for the best? One quick leap, that's all it would take. Do you understand what I'm saying to you, Runt?" Number One nodded, dazed. What a lovely voice. Where'd that come from? The other side, of course. That's where he should go. One small step for an imp.
"I understand, sir."
"Good. The subject is closed. As Lady Hetherington Smythe would say, best foot forward, young sir. The world waits." Number One nodded, just as he knew Abbott wanted him to. But inside, his brain churned along with his stomach. Was this to be the whole extent of his life? Forever mocked, forever different. Never a moment of light or hope. Unless he crossed over. Abbott's suggestion was his only hope. Cross over. Number One had never seen the appeal of jumping into a crater before, but now the notion seemed nigh on irresistible. He was a warlock. There couldn't be any doubt. And somewhere out there, in the human world, there was another like him. An ancient brother who could teach him the ways of his kind. Number One watched Abbott stride away from him, off to exercise his power on some other part of the island, possibly by belittling the females in the compound, another of his favourite pastimes. Then again, how bad could Abbott be? After all, he had given Number One this wonderful idea. "I cannot stay here," thought Number One. "I must go to the volcano." The notion took firm hold of his brain, and in minutes it had drowned out all the other notions in his head. "Go to the volcano." It pounded inside his skull like waves breaking on the shore. "Obey Abbott. Go to the volcano." Number One brushed the dust from his knees. "You know what?" he muttered to himself in case Rawley could hear. "I think I'm going to the volcano."